It's Monday, November 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, controversy and conviction. President-elect Trump names more picks for top government jobs.
I would like to see Donald Trump continue that policy. And that's the only way that you can stop Chinese ambition.
Vietnamese Americans see Trump as a tough foreign policy president. Also ahead, free trade still looking to be targeted by Trump. Diplomatic differences voiced over Aleppo. And the story of a boxer with a broken neck. It's all on today's International Edition. Donald Trump's White House chief of staff to be has defended the president-elect's most recent picks for top administration posts. Trump announced on Friday he had chosen Republican Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama for Attorney General, retired Lieutenant General Michael Flynn for National Security Advisor, and Republican Congressman Mike Pompeo of Kansas for CIA Director. Groups that oppose Trump are blasting his choices, but minority Democrats will not be able to block Trump nominees for administration posts by themselves, having curtailed a key procedural maneuver that Republicans once wielded against selections made by President Barack Obama. To talk more about the early stages of the presidential transition is VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman in our studio.
It should come as no surprise, Jim, that this president-elect, like all president-elects before him, is choosing people with whom he feels comfortable, people who seem to share his point of view, his worldview. This is not to be unexpected. However, there was some thought that because of the sort of extremist nature of some of the things that Donald Trump had said on the campaign trail, that there might be some effort to try to moderate things if and when he won the presidency, as he has done. That does not seem to be the case in terms of the people that he is choosing. His attorney general pick, Alabama Republican Senator Jeff Sessions, one of the first senators to come forward and support him, going back to the early days of the campaign. This is someone who has given speech after speech after speech, absolutely excoriating undocumented immigrants. This is someone who has spoken in favor of banning Muslims from certain parts of the world under certain conditions until the program can be thoroughly vetted. Now, this is something that sounds very familiar. In fact, it's almost word for word identical to what Donald Trump has said. When you look at Mike Pompeo, who is a congressman from Kansas, who is going to be, if he's confirmed, the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, he is not a fan of the extent to which the Obama administration has pulled back on the interrogation techniques for terror suspects. The Obama administration went away from the waterboarding and the enhanced interrogation techniques that caused so much consternation in years after the Bush administration. He thinks that some of that was a mistake. And guess who agrees with him on that point? That would be Donald Trump.
As we get into some of the issues, apparently some have softened a little bit, some have changed, some seem to be right about where he was talking about on the campaign trail.
There's always a gap between what's promised on the campaign trail and what can actually be accomplished, or at least in the speed in which it can be accomplished. There was a time when Donald Trump spoke of sending each and every undocumented immigrant back to their country of origin. It was always sort of understood by anyone who had looked at the phenomenon and the sheer numbers of undocumented immigrants that that was going to be something that would be difficult to do at all, and certainly not all in one fell swoop. Now Donald Trump is saying, well, we're going to focus on those who have committed crimes. And Donald Trump estimated them to be maybe 1 or 2 million who have committed crimes in the United States. Guess who is also focused on sending home undocumented individuals who have committed crimes? That would be President Barack Obama. So clearly there's going to have to be some ironing out of exactly what the position is going forward. I suspect that the Trump administration will be a less immigrant-friendly administration in general, at least for those who come without permission, than the Obama administration has been.
in the Senate is our correspondent, Michael Bowman. Michael, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure, Jim.
And now it's time for us to look at social media. Michael Lippin has been following what's trending online. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Jim.
What's the word on the future First Lady of the United States?
Well, you know, there's been some reporting, not yet confirmed, that Melania Trump and her son Barron may not necessarily move into the White House along with Donald when he's sworn in as president in January. Now, the New York Post has an exclusive report out today saying that Melania and 10-year-old Barron plan to stay at their current home in Trump Tower in New York City for now, so that Barron can finish his academic year at a private school in Manhattan. Now, that report is based on unnamed sources, and Trump's spokesman Jason Miller responded to it without confirming or denying, just saying it's a sensitive matter. But the issue has gotten a lot of attention on Facebook, with more than 1 million people talking about Melania and Barron.
Well, I'm sure they're under the microscope. What are people saying?
Well, one Facebook user, Melanie Kellum Beard, wrote this: "So Melania thinks it's best that Barron stays in his own school and routine for now. She's putting her child first. Sounds like a good mom to me." Well, there's also been some criticism about the security arrangements that would have to be made if the First Lady and her son do stay at Trump Tower, namely all the Secret Service agents who would have to protect the building. Facebook user Corey Alexander Walker said, "This arrangement will cost taxpayers money. If Obama did this, conservatives would be angry."
Well, certainly a unique situation. I also hear that American rapper Kanye West is generating social media attention for something that he said about Trump. What's going on there?
Well, 2 days after Kanye, who's an African-American, shocked many of his fans for telling a California concert that he didn't vote but would have picked Trump if he had, he made another lengthy political statement, some would say a rant, at another concert in the state on Saturday night. This time, Kanye said that he was embracing Trump's political incorrectness and said that people in the audience who supported Hillary Clinton and felt like they lost had been lied to by Facebook, Google, and so on. Kanye also performed just 3 songs, leaving some disappointed fans to demand refunds on social media. His detractors also are using the hashtag #KanyeIsOverParty. It's one of the top trends right now on Twitter in the U.S.
Wow, fascinating. I guess fans are probably more upset he only played 3 songs than his political convictions.
Maybe.
Thank you so much, Michael. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at @VOA_IE. That's our International Edition Twitter feed. I'm at @VOA Stevenson, and you can follow Michael at @Michael_Lippin. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia: South Korea indicts president's friend, alleges conspiracy. Tens of thousands rally in Kuala Lumpur demanding fair elections. Indian groups protest bill to grant citizenship to Bangladeshi Hindus. China says it will iron out South China Sea disputes itself. Noted U.S. economist warns of future economic woes in China. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and a whole lot more at the voanews.com website, and through your smartphone, use our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. More Asian Americans voted for Hillary Clinton than Donald Trump, according to the 2016 National Asian American Election Eve poll. But in the politically active Vietnamese community, there are still many Republicans who voted for Trump. VOA's Elizabeth Lee went to a community called Little Saigon in Southern California to find out what their expectations are for the next president of the United States.
The ladies at this mahjong table and Leslie Lee are similar to many longtime Republicans in the Vietnamese community. They can be described as reluctant Trump supporters. Lee says he has low expectations of Trump.
I vote for him not because I admire him, not because I accept him as the very capable candidate for presidency, but I don't like Hillary Clinton.
Other Vietnamese Republicans have higher hopes of Trump's future advisors.
His staffers and advisors will be there to help. Therefore, at last minute, I ended up with voting for him.
em cũng chọn ông Trump.
Many Vietnamese Americans who came to the U.S. as refugees after the fall of Saigon in 1975 started voting Republican when they became citizens because they believe the party will fight communism. Faith is another reason some Vietnamese vote Republican. Long Pham is Catholic.
I maintain Republican because I don't believe in the abortion.
Unlike some of the reluctant Trump supporters, Mike Nguyen believes in Trump's proposed agenda, including the selection of a conservative Supreme Court justice who Nguyen hopes will change certain social issues.
For example, the family, Mary, by a long time ago, you know, the definition is a marriage between men and women, you know. I'm not discriminating against the gay people, but they have another form like a union.
Nguyen also expects the U.S. economy to improve under Trump's leadership.
Like any voter, I expect a lot. I would like to get some jobs back here for the American people.
On Trump's foreign policy, Lee says he likes Trump's tough stance on China, which could benefit Vietnam.
So I like the idea that Donald Trump sees China as an enemy, try to draw Vietnam back to the position as a United States ally. And I would like to see Donald Trump continue that policy. And that is the only way that you can stop Chinese ambition.
No matter what he promised in the campaign, many Vietnamese Americans know there are limitations to what Trump can do, and he may have to compromise.
We have the Congress, we have Supreme Court, so it's not like a third world country where you have a new king and the king changes the whole thing. I would give him at least, you know, 1 or 2 years. 100 days would be a little bit too quick.
They will give it time to see if the new president lives up to their expectations. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Orange County, California.
A lot of the economy has to do with trade and free trade, or the notion of international trade with few restrictions and lower tariffs, may be among the losers in a new Trump administration. The pending Trans-Pacific Partnership is essentially dead in Congress. The 1994 NAFTA agreement may be up for renegotiation. And Washington's European partners fear the TTIP, the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, is on life support. As Millar Sega reports, analysts blame protectionist rhetoric during a tumultuous election season for the growing anti-trade sentiment.
TPP, a free trade agreement among 12 nations that combined would have accounted for nearly 40% of the world's economic output, isn't going anywhere. And under a Donald Trump administration, European partners fear a similar deal with the U.S. may also be at risk.
We don't really know what will happen. There is a strong reason to believe that there will be a pause in TTIP, that this might not be the biggest priority for the new administration.
On the campaign trail, President-elect Donald Trump has said he would scrap what he calls bad trade deals like NAFTA, which he says is responsible for the loss of millions of American jobs. But despite its flaws, policy expert Bill Galston says NAFTA helped create a continental supply chain that has made the U.S. auto industry among the world's most competitive.
If that relationship were to be disrupted, then it could have serious consequences, and it's not clear to me that it would have the effect of bringing auto jobs back to the United States.
Scrapping trade deals, particularly in Asia, is a missed opportunity, says Jeff Kingston, director of Asian Studies at Temple University in Japan.
There's already concerns around Asia about the reliability of the United States as an ally. Clearly, Trump's election will definitely amplify those concerns and anxieties. And so I think that this means that there's going to be a significant decline in American influence in Asia.
Beijing has preempted threats by Donald Trump to raise tariffs on Chinese goods by warning of a possible trade war, suggesting China could cancel orders for American planes or impose tougher regulations on U.S. companies that do business in China.
The idea that this is a one-way street and we can threaten China and China can't threaten us back, I think, is too simple.
Galston warns that not taking the lead in East Asia means the Chinese will, and he says the U.S. will not like the outcome. China, the world's second largest economy, is moving quickly to fill the vacuum, proposing the creation of its own regional free trade zone at the Asia-Pacific Economic Summit this week in Peru. Millar Sega, VOA News, Washington.
Syrian Foreign Minister Walid al-Muallam says his government is totally opposed to a proposal by UN envoy Stephane de Mistura for an autonomous zone in the opposition-controlled east of Aleppo. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo. Muallam spoke after meeting with de Mistura in Damascus.
Syrian Foreign Minister Walid al-Muallam met with UN envoy de Mistura as the government's offensive, combined with Russian airstrikes, continued Sunday against rebel-held eastern Aleppo. Rebel fighters shelled government-controlled districts of the city, with casualties reported on both sides. Muallam told journalists his government opposes the UN envoy's proposal for a self-governing zone in eastern Aleppo. He says de Mistura's suggestion is totally rejected by the government because it infringes on Syria's national sovereignty and deters from the fight against terrorism. Muallam insisted the rebels, whom he called terrorists, must withdraw from the east of the city in order to put an end to the suffering of its citizens. The government claims Islamic militias are demanding civilians pay $150 each to leave the rebel sector. The veteran Syrian foreign minister insists the government is committed to fighting the Islamic State group, but he blasted U.S.-Turkish efforts to fight IS in the north of the country. He denounced what he called an agreement between U.S. and Turkish military commanders over the future of the city of Raqqa and who would control it after IS is pushed out. He insists Syria will not accept the presence of a single Turkish soldier on its soil. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
This is VOA's International Edition. A new film starring Miles Teller and Aaron Eckhart, Bleed for This, tells the inspiring true story of Vinzi Pazienza, who overcame a broken neck to win a world title. International Edition's David Byrd tells us about the film.
Miles Teller and Vinny Pazienza share a brotherhood neither one wanted. They were both in near-fatal car accidents. In Teller's case, he was in a crash 1 year before a good friend was killed in a car wreck. For Pazienza, a 1991 crash broke his neck and nearly ended his boxing career. Remarkably, the fighter came back from the injury, including training in a metal rig called a halo that was drilled into his skull, and was able to box again, winning the super middleweight title. Bleed for This tells the story of that comeback. Teller, best known for Whiplash and the Divergent movie series, trained with boxing trainer Daryl Foster, who trained fighters like Sugar Ray Leonard and helped Will Smith become Muhammad Ali for 2001's Ali. Teller says he thinks the film does Pazienza justice.
It was about an eight-month kind of physical test for me. I lost 20 pounds, got down to like 6% body fat, and you know, to me that was just to have the look of the guy, and then you gotta learn how to box, and I thought we made like a really beautiful film, and we did it in 24 days, really tight shoot, but it was just such a, I don't know, it, it just felt so authentic, and I know Vinny had just a beautiful response to the film, and that means everything.
Aaron Eckhart plays Pazienza's trainer, Kevin Rooney. He says Bleed for This shows the special trust that boxers have with the people in their corners.
It's a sacred bond, total trust. It's family. It's interesting when you see boxers, young boxers especially, come into the game. They always have their father. They always have their family and brothers and everything. And so that continues all the way through the fight game.
Miles Teller says that Pazienza was a larger-than-life character, and his comeback is the stuff of legend.
Vinny was known as much for his personality as he was for, you know, his wins and losses. Although he did have 50 wins and 5 world championships and fought, you know, a ton of guys, he was a showman. He loved Muhammad Ali. That's why he, you know, kind of wanted to get into boxing and knew how to sell a fight. And he just had a certain, like you said, a charisma. He was an entertaining guy, and you just, you know, you do your homework and you try and play him as truthfully as possible.
Director Ben Younger says the film and Pazienza's comeback from injury inspired him and has inspired audiences.
I think that boxing is sort of this outsized but accessible parable for the challenges that any of us face. This one takes it to the next level because of Vinny's comeback and the injury, but the feeling people seem to get when they leave the theater, and it's what he did for me, honestly, on a personal level, which was you sort of reevaluate the issues you have in your life, the conflicts, the challenges that seem insurmountable. You see what this guy did, and everything just seems like doable.
Vinny Pazienza finished his career with 50 wins and 10 losses. He scored 18 of those wins and had 5 losses after his comeback from a broken neck. Bleed for This is distributed by Open Road Films and is rated R for language, sexuality, and car accident images. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
And we thank you for listening to International Edition. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Earlier this year, at the second U.S.-India Strategic and Commercial Dialogue in New Delhi, the two countries reiterated their shared commitment to advance mutual prosperity, global peace, and stability. In the joint statement issued at the conclusion of the meeting, the United States and India noted progress and opportunities in the bilateral cooperation on resilience, air quality, forestry and science and technology fellowships under the joint working group. In the support of the joint statement, the Indo-U.S. Science and Technology Forum, the National Institute for Environmental Health Sciences, and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention sponsored the Indo-U.S. workshop to explore bilateral research opportunities to address air quality and health issues earlier this month in New Delhi, the same week that record air pollution in New Delhi was making international news headlines. Srikanth Nadadur, the workshop's initiator and primary organizer, laid the groundwork for the gathering during his tenure as a U.S. Embassy in New Delhi Science Fellow in the fall of 2015. Guest of honor, Jairam Ramesh, member of the Indian Parliament, applauded the scientists for their efforts to study ambient air pollution, particularly by addressing crop residue burning, and highlighted the importance of addressing water, chemical, and indoor air pollution. Representatives of the U.S. Embassy in New Delhi and the NYU School of Medicine addressed the importance of creating, maintaining, and expanding bilateral research on these urgent issues. The workshop reviewed air quality and health research conducted by scientists in India and the United States. Researchers at top Indian research institutes presented on the status of air pollution population studies conducted in India. The workshop also included breakout sessions on air quality and health and an exposure assessment. A panel reviewed the draft recommendations produced by the workshop and made recommendations to bolster the report that will be forwarded to the appropriate government points of contact for consideration. The workshop underscored the importance of a clean and healthy environment, recognized by President Barack Obama and Prime Minister Narendra Modi during President Obama's visit to India in January 2015. It also highlighted the real opportunities for air quality cooperation and demonstrated the critical role of science in advancing the economic development and well-being of people in both countries, as the two sides affirmed in August 2016.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.